Sir, my first question is, how did Sri Aurobindo's spiritual philosophy define the role of women in individual and social transformation?
So first is that Sri Aurobindo's teaching is based on the truth of the soul, or the truth of the divine. So fundamentally from the divine standpoint, it's not from the human standpoint that he's looking at it, that we all have our own ways. So from the divine standpoint, as far as the soul is concerned, there is no basic difference. So first thing that the mother would keep on telling everybody is that forget that you are a man and a woman. This itself is the seed of, you know, problems. So there is a biological difference. If we are centered only on the body sense, as most of humanity is, then that difference becomes so important, so striking, that we base our entire life based on that difference. Lot of social systems evolve based on only this difference, which is biological. Then to that biological difference, there is added a social crust over millenniums. So that also Sri Aurobindo and the mother both say that over a period of time, many things came up as a kind of social mechanisms, you may call it, where the woman's role was subordinated. Particularly even in India, where on one side we worship Shakti, but the Vedantic Purusha is being so strongly embedded that Purusha is the ultimate reality. Now, the experiences of the seers did not mean Purusha by just a man, but it has got embedded into the psyche, and that you see almost everywhere getting replicated, and this happened all over the world. Also partly because of the feminine nature being more centered in the emotion. So all that I am saying is based on the writing.
Right.
So a woman is more centered in the psychic and the emotions, and a man is more centered in the intellect. So because of the way evolution has taken place, so the person living in the mind automatically takes that I am superior. But repeatedly Madhura and Sri Aurobindo do a course correction for us that, well, mind, for all its superiority and whatever it has given us, is also a kind of fall from the direct intuitive perception of creation with which the ancients related. So while on one side mind gives an edge, on the other side it's like a fall, which is what is typified in the stories of, you know, Bible, and also our own story in certain ways about Manu and Shatrupa. So basically the story is that mind, when the tree of knowledge is tasted, now that's where mind comes in as an operating system. So human beings suffered a fall, but mind became the operative system now. So it has seems the apex of creation. So we have to reconnect with the heart, which we have lost, with faith, with the intuitive intelligence, with the love in the heart. And that's where women have a great role to play, because they are endowed with it. So when we talk about the in the modern context, how can the, you know, the women once again the balance can be reset? So we have to remember that the balance cannot be reset by that kind of feminism wherein a woman takes in all the horrible things of men, like smoking, drinking, and playing it cool, abusive language, which is what we see. That's the dark kind of equality. It's like I become like an animal, therefore I am equal to an animal. Right. It is the other way around. It's like, one, men must learn to ennoble themselves, to develop those qualities which over a period of time, soul is the same, but in nature there is over a period of time certain kind of feminine aspects which have come up, which today we talk of soft powers,
right,
more heart-centered. Whereas there is a masculine nature also, where there is an intellectual capacity. So both must enrich each other, and the woman must discover her own innate strength. So that's the term that they would use, is spiritual feminism.
Right.
Not the feminism of the Western kind, where, you know, the woman becomes just, he copies the worst of man.
Right.
So spiritual feminism, she must discover her own Shakti, and men also must discover their own Shakti and join in a higher truth.
Right.
Yes. Till then they should have mutual respect for each other, regard each other as complementary beings, till they discover the higher truth where Ishvara and Shakti are one.
Right.
but two modes of being. So till then, we march toward their discovery, having mutual respect for each other, nourishing and supporting each other's deepest quest and higher parts, rather than dragging down into the abyss. So this is there in very short.
My second question is that in what ways did Aurobindo's writings address the issues of gender equality?
Yes. So the soul has no gender, if you want to ask in one. This something which mother has said. The soul has no gender. The self has no gender. We have put a masculine, incidentally. Use the word Purusha. We put a gender. But actually it has no gender. So when it is said divine mother and the Ishwara, it's not about genders. It's about the two modes of being of one reality. So this is a course correction that they do. So when the reality is in a quiescent passive state, it's called as Purusha. But when it comes out, brings out of itself its power and knowledge and pours it into creation, it becomes Shakti. It's like the sun and the energy of the sun going into creation. So he does a course correction. He addresses this by saying that don't divide what is never divided. Unfortunately, this conception has been strengthened by the images and idols and the television serials where the feminine or Shakti is always shown in a woman's dress, wearing a sari, all that. So it's time that we understand that that reality is not like a typical man-woman relationship which has been. So they address it in this way, that the divine reality is beyond gender. But unwittingly, again, say Brahman is without gender. But invariably you will see that when people speak about Brahman, a masculine sense comes in. So Maya becomes subordinate. You see the point. So Aurobindo and the mother speak of the Brahman and Maya as one reality. And that's because they, now this going a little deeper into the metaphysical system, they talk about the triple status. So there is the Sharbhav and there is the Akshara. Akshara is Brahman as the soul reality. Shar is where it's become multiple Purushas. But beyond the Shar and Akshara, the Gita speaks about Purushottama. Actually the Gita hints at it. So when Shri Krishna speaks of himself as the Purushottama, he says something very interesting. He says, Etada Yonihi, I am the womb. So you see, he is also the feminine. And that is the truth actually of that reality which we call as beyond, transcending both Shar and Akshar. This Shri Krishna brings it out first time. But because again, human mind conditioning Shri Krishna as a man. Okay. So Aurobindo and the mother have done a course correction at every level.
Right.
Aurobindo has stepped behind and the mother is in the forefront. Exactly the relation which is there in the Ishwara and Shakti. Right. They are one. But the, when it comes to creation, it's the divine mother. First as Mahamaya, Vidyamay Maya, then Avidyamay Maya, then Prakriti. It is she who has gone in. But there is always the Ishwara standing behind giving the sanction.
Right.
So first time we see that this original relation has been reproduced in their actual life. So in the ashram, entirely we see Aurobindo is behind, sanctioning everything. Everything the mother will go and tell him. And he would, like he is the sanctioning, ultimate sanctioning. But she is the one who is executing, organizing, if you may use the human word, administering, taking in all the problems of the sadhaks, doing whatever is needed. And that's why she made a very interesting observation. Without him, I exist not. Without me, he is unmanifest. So that is how they do the course correction. The course correction is to first take place inside. Then only outwardly it will manifest. To say that no, both are equal, still inside we have a gap. So we must do the correction that in the ultimate reality they are one truth. But one truth in two poises. And it's not like this is higher and this is subordinate. It's not like Brahman is higher and Maya is subordinate. That's why we couldn't understand the meaning of creation.
Right.
And individual moksha became a goal. So that is the course correction they have done from the spiritual point of view. And in the ashram, in organization, it's a unique place. You'll see it where men and women have totally equal in every way they play together, they learn everything together, they do physical education together and in departments, everywhere. It's not like you are a man, therefore you are a woman. So whatever a man can do, a woman can do.
Right.
Of course, it's understood that equally there are things which are of a degrading kind that is either a man or a woman. That's something which is not conducive to your higher life.
Right.
So again, it's not because of being a man or a woman. It's not like woman has to cook. So here in the dining room, you'll see both men and women joining hands
right.
in cooking. Equally, it's not like man has to be in the administration. No, equally, like in our department, the HOD is a woman. Among the trustees, there is a woman. So it's like they are together in every way. So that's at a pragmatic level also they have done that.
Related to this question is, I think as per I have written this days, mother joined Sri Aurobindo in 1925.
Mother came first time in 1914.
Hmm.
And she had her own realization. So
right.
first I'm just correcting this part.
Yes.
So she had her own realizations of the same kind with Sri Aurobindo had, but pursuing her own line of yoga.
Right.
Then the two came together, she knew that he is the one with whom her work is there, and Sri Aurobindo had knew that she is born free and you know who she is. Then she went away because of the war, so they had to go. She was married and they had to go back because her husband was part of the French, this thing, and other areas were British India, France was involved in the war, so she went back. And then 1920 she came permanently.
In Pondicherry.
Then she never went out. But what you are describing about not 1925 but 1926, Sri Aurobindo put her in the forefront. Mm. And in a way she took the charge of the what came to be known as the ashram life.
Right.
There was never any formal declaration that okay, now we are starting an ashram. That's not how Sri Aurobindo and the mother ever worked.
Right.
Very organically things sprang. So there were disciples, even 1920 onwards, several evening talks, but mother would remain in the background.
Right.
And it's only that at some point Sri Aurobindo would usually used to call her as Meera Devi, then while saying Ma, he would, as if he is hesitating. Then one day he suddenly used the word mother.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was surprised that why he is calling this European lady mother. She's a great yogini, that they could make out. Then in 1926, formally means Sri Aurobindo said, henceforth any problem, any issues, you have to approach through the mother. And I am taking, not the word retiring doesn't go in the sense of retirement, but retiring into seclusion and solitude to bring the supramental with a greater intensity.
Right.
So that's where from 1926, 24th November onwards, mother was in the forefront.
So 1914, mother directly came to the Pondicherry.
Yes, first time she came directly. Yeah.
Okay. And Sri Aurobindo
and came to meet Sri Aurobindo.
Oh.
Because she had in her visions several teachers coming to her, and then with one of them she formed a deep bond, and she used to address that particular figure as Krishna.
Right.
And she did pranam to that figure in a typical Indian way. She was very surprised who this figure is. And then when she came, her husband had come earlier and told her about who he is. She had also, because when he was coming to meet him, because of his elections he had come, she gave him also a seal to check, to see. You know, she had heard that there is a great yogi.
Mm.
But she had not seen him. So to see if he can interpret that seal. Just to make sure that it's not one of those beings who imitate like a divine being. So she had conducted her own little test, and she knew that he is truly the realized one. But she yet didn't know. The confirmation came when she came next time. I mean, when the husband came next time and she accompanied. The moment she met him on 29th March 1914, then immediately that whole vision and everything came back. Oh, he's the one whom I have been already in contact with and used to call as Krishna.
Okay.
So then it was very clear that her work is with him. There's no doubt.
And Sri Aurobindo, I think from Calcutta to Pondicherry started journey from 1910.
Yes, in 1910, February, he had an Adesh based on which he first went to Chandanagar. So the Adesh was go to Chandanagar. Adesh is the divine command he is referring to. It was not a mentally, though outwardly yes, from British India to French India, but the divine Adesh, divine may well have all these things in mind. But Sri Aurobindo was not doing it as per any mental calculation.
Mm.
And from Chandanagar he got the Adesh go to Pondicherry. So for about few weeks he was in Chandanagar, where there is a whole set of experiences and which are documented. And then he had the command go to Pondicherry, so he sailed to Pondicherry. And 4th April 1910 he reached Pondicherry.
Okay.
So basically it was Calcutta to Chandanagar to
Pondicherry. And when Sri Aurobindo started this ashram?
On 24th November 1926. Again, it was not like a... It's called now as a ashram foundation day.
But activity, ashram related activity or the...
So again it depends on how we look at it. The moment mother came in 1914, they both knew their mission. So she started a little thing like a new idea, a group which would discuss 1 hour of selfless work. There were a group of 6-7 sadhaks already. And there were some who were also local. So all these sadhaks together, she gave them this work. She started a business center called the Honesty Society, so that it can become self-sufficient. This very little community, maybe 10. And she also started the Arya, which at her prompting Sri Aurobindo started writing, you know, which are now the books of Sri Aurobindo.
Right.
So all this she started, but then she had to go back. So many things came on hold. When she came back in 1920, again, it was not ashram, but everyday life has to go on. So she would cook meals in the evening for Sri Aurobindo and take care. She started taking care of the household. Without formally any ashram coming up. So all the inmates, not inmates the way we understand today, but those who were living with Sri Aurobindo, they became aware also that, you know, there is this extremely refined and yogini who is very organized and meticulous, so that's only the rights, that how they suddenly had to abandon their bohemian lifestyle. So, but 1926 onwards, 24th November 1926, because now the sadhaks had to approach her for everything. Now she started organizing the ashram life, the different departments came up as per the need. But then definitely behind them the divine plan was that in every activity the divine consciousness must manifest. So it was not just some writing, some reading, meditating and eating food. Everything came up, like painting, music, marbling, later on even solar energy projects, school came up, many activities, sports, physical education. So almost all the activity, of course the business part, so all these activities developed around the idea that in all fields there should be divine manifestations, and that entire work is mother's. Whole departments, everything. Sri Aurobindo would be informed, and also from his yogi consciousness. But everything, mother was taking care. Everything, every department you go.
Sir, could you explain how women's participation in the early ashram life related to the Aurobindo's vision, particular except mother, any other few inmates or...
So, yes. So, in the very early years, like if you say, when the ashram just started, they were both men and women. This itself is in a way revolutionary, because as you must be knowing the spiritual history, though Buddha did introduce eventually, did accept women monks, but it was with great, there was an initial resistance even in his mind. Ascetics saw women as, because the ascetic life, and they saw women as a kind of, not very conducive to yogic life, and often as a means of fall. This was the impressions. Swami Vivekananda, another revolutionary who actually, women participation, and some others like Brahmo Samaj. So you see that women, but Brahmo Samaj didn't organize in ashrams like that. But Swami Dayananda Saraswati, again, he accepted like women should be part of the, but in terms of a monastery life, ashram. We hear about Buddha, we hear about Swami Vivekananda, with Sister Nivedita's, when he came back after his tour, we see that women monks had their own place, had their own separate place. But here the mother went, took that experiment to the next level. So there was nothing like a separate woman ashram or a man, they were together. So somewhere who came together as a couple, like Puraniji and his wife Lalita, but there were many who were independent. Some just came from the same place, they each has his own story, but they were men and women both. Right in the beginning also, even on 24th November in that meditation, numbers of course women were few because it was not easy for a woman to come. But once accepted, everything was equal. Now in terms of, there was not much work, not much activity, mainly that time. Then slowly as the activities grew, women participation grew more and more. But the real change came because still they were used to a conventional way of dressing, the sari and, not sari with a gungat, but still that was the dress. Men were wearing dhotis for that matter, it was still based on that. Once the physical education started, somewhere in the 40s, 43, 44 and then 44, if I remember right, and then eventually it was started for the children, and then all the inmates started participating. Then one day, this is very beautifully documented in Kriti Das Gupta's book, Moments Eternal.
Kriti Das Gupta.
Moments Eternal. It's quite a few have others have documented, Chitra Sen, but these are the women who were there. So mother suddenly asked them to wear shorts and shirts. Now this was strange. So they were very shy, but then she recounted that how when she wore shorts and she was very hesitating, then mother simply remarked, "Oh, your legs are so beautiful." So it was like you can learn to appreciate. You don't have to bring in that physical dimension of lust everywhere. So she was teaching people how to look at the body also very impersonally, with the sense of beauty, which is an important aspect of the divine. But obviously there was no the way we understand today of dressing sense. So women wear equally. So they would wear the same dress as men, shorts and shirts, except that they would use a scarf on the head. What was it called?
Kitty cap.
This kitty cap, the reason was that...
Kitty cap.
Because, if they had a long hair, so it will fly off. So for swimming it will be difficult. Okay. So all the activities were same. Boxing, fencing, whatever they wanted. So there was no. So this was the first revolution where women and men participated shoulder to shoulder in everything. And then still greater when 47 or probably it was during the French when they left. So they wanted the mother had organized a kind of march past around the city. Okay. City means this what today you see as the beach road and going around. So in that the leader was a man and a woman. So a lot of local people and other, they were very stunned. So some even threw stones. I mean, this is not about these local people. Anywhere in India probably that may have been the response.
Yes. Full pants and break.
Custom wear. Full pant and shirt. And leading, right. Women and men both are leading together. So then when this was informed to the mother, she said, "You ignore them, don't worry." That's all she said. You continue. And today in the ashram we have, after every march past thing, you have female captains, you have men who are captains. That means group, they are leading. And then at the end, after Bande Mataram, both are holding flags, they go and put it in front of the mother, one man, one woman who have, done.
Which are the events you are doing this?
All the four darshan days, there is a march past in the playground. Okay. That means 21st February, 24th April, 15th August. And
21st February?
15th August.
15th August.
That is mother and Shobhita's birthday. 24th April, mother's final arrival.
Right.
And 24th November, what is known as the Siddhi Day. So these are the 4 days you have march past in the playground, and again on 2nd December, that is the school's actually the annual demonstration of the entire physical education. So there again you will see women and men, and at the end they will go and
Second December.
They are flag bearers.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is a school established.
It's called, but it's also the physical demonstration day. Otherwise, 16th December is the day the school starts, and 6th January, it was officially sort of declared. So these are the dates.
Sir, who are the 6 person? Can you name any of them who's along with the Sri Aurobindo during the initial days of that?
Yes. So there was, of course, Nalini Kandgupt. He is the foremost. Then there is Suresh Chakravarti, who was his brother-in-law. He was known as Moni. There was Vijay Goswami. Then there was, of course, locally, there was Amrita, who was Arava Mudachari, his name was given as Amrita. Among the early ones, I can name you. Then Partha Sarthi, Ayyar, Srinivasachari, I may mix up with some of these names, but basically,
no problem.
So these were the ones, I think a couple of them more.
Right, sir.
Subramanyam Bharati joined them also. Subramanyam Bharati, the famous poet.
Sir, before independence, the ashram did get any grants from the French government?
No. Ashram got no grants, and for a long time, even after independence, the school started getting grants, not grants, but there was a subsidy of given, as far as I remember. I am not the best person for this part, because I have in my life generally stayed away from administrative activities all over, even in my Air Force, more out of personal choice that, but as far as the little that I know, that's...
Srinivasachari, Suresh
Chakravarti,
Vijay Kumar
Nag. So Vijay Kumar Nag. Okay, so yeah, that's basically we were right. So grants part, actually I don't think even now there is any grant. There is a exemption which is standard given to all the places. So like any ashram or research institute, if you give something, so there is an exception if you donate. But I don't think there is any grant, but subsidy has been there, if I remember right, to the dining room and, I'm not 100% sure, but as far as I think, possibly there is. And for the school, that time, the then Prime Minister had said that, we will be ready to give a recognition to it, because it was not recognized, but they had few conditions. Mother didn't want any conditions. She said no, because then there will be deviation in the divine work, and then people will, after those conditions, there will be some other. So she never wanted any kind of government intervention.
Right.
Neither in ashram nor in Auroville. Very clearly, because the moment government comes in, it brings in its own, government functions according to it, it's like an impersonal thing.
Right.
So, basically it has remained autonomous, except for the fact that, well, you are living in the land, so law of the land applies. Autonomous, obviously, as an institution, the number of autonomous institutions, they don't mean disconnected from the law of the land. Some people start believing that, especially when they come from outside, we can do anything because it's autonomous. No. If I say, go on the right side of the road, drive, and somebody catches me, I'm subject to the same law as anybody else.
Yes, correct.
So autonomous in terms of financial and the way they want to. So the school is entirely autonomous in that sense. There is no syllabus, there is nothing of the government regulations, except for the legal regulations, say for
that, like POSCO,
like POSCO Act and all, they will apply. But no other, that, how many teachers, they have many more teachers here. No teacher is paid, no student is charged. So, they follow their own thing. But yes, due to a special act in the parliament, I don't remember when, many of these students have been allowed to, like in certain places like JNU or military, if they want to join, so they are accepted. Yes.
It is under CBSE.
It is taken as like board? Graduation equivalent.
Board is under CBSE, sir?
No, there is no board. There is no exam. That's why I am saying. No exam at all. So they learn at their own pace. the way they take joy in subjects, free progress system is a word. You have both. You have free progress system where child learns at his own pace, completely. He may learn mathematics, let's say, in grade 10, but language or English in grade 6.
Okay.
So he is given a choice. That's in free progress.
Okay.
But simultaneously, they have a mainstreaming. But there is no board or exam even in mainstream.
Okay.
All that it means is that all of them are enter the same class. And but there is a lot of freedom there, and they can choose any subjects in higher courses. They can choose, let's say, Spanish, Shobindo's writings, physics, and biology.
Any combination.
Any combination. Any right, combination. Right.
So students are residential over here or?
They have both. They have parents can stay, but residential is also there. Residential is available only 6 years onwards.
6 years onwards. Okay.
Whereas school opens like at 3 you can apply.
Okay.
But 3 to 6, if a child is admitted, parents have to, or some guardian has to take care.
Sir, my next question is, are there any specific example of women disciples who are at the top positions? Especially, I want to take the interview of them also.
Yes, you can take plenty of them. With that, probably, you know, today we can stop, and
okay,
tomorrow I'll continue at the same time. Come at 10 tomorrow.
Yes, today also I come at 10.
I know, unfortunately.
No problem.
And whatever questions are left, you can just email me always, just in case.
Right, sir. And sir, your number so that I can...
I'll write it. No problem, I'll write it. You message me on the phone.
Right, sir, because tomorrow I am going, my school is opening, so that's why...
Okay.
Sir, my next question is, what challenges do you face in sustaining the balance between traditional values and contemporary feminist thought?
Traditional values are a context, in a context of time, and there are two aspects of it. One is the deeper core, and the other is the outer form that it has taken. So deeper core is very beautiful, and that has to be kept intact. And as I said, the deeper core is not about man and woman being unequal. That's an imbalance of human thought. But both have a right to equally pursue their higher evolution. And both, in case they either individually or in terms of the society, take society towards degradation, both have to be dealt with in equal terms. So that's how it's become very simple. What was known is known in Indian thought as dharma and adharma. We have forgotten that. So dharma and adharma apply to everyone. To take an example, in Ramayana. So in Ramayana, Suparnakha and Taraka, they are both women. They have to be dealt with the way they had to be dealt with. Ravan is a Shiva Bhakta, knowledgeable Pandit. So with Kumbhakarna and Meghnath. Meghnath has done a lot of tapasya, and yet it is a dharma towards Vistiyar. So what has to be seen is not whether the person is a male or a female, but whether the person is engaged in dharma or adharma. Now dharma and adharma is a very wide context, and I'm not going into it, but certainly it has nothing to do with ritualistic religion as we understand. And in our thing, dharma is a very wide, most of us don't understand even traditional values. So we pick up something from here, something from there, something which has come up simply by the way we are, fact we are born in a certain family. And we take it as dharma. But dharma is not about that. It is about the deep inner values. I'll give another example of Meera. She seeks the advice of Tulsidas when her in-laws send her away. So she asks him that, what do? I don't feel naturally a Shakta. I feel love for Krishna. I cannot cook meat, eat meat and live this way. So what do? Now this is way back. Divorce is all this out of question. And Tulsidas' advice is very beautifully, Jaake priyana rama vedahi, so chhaadiye taj, koti vairi sam jadabhi param sanahi. And he gives a number of examples. that you should abandon those who do not go with your own deepest quest, basically, if you have to put it in modern term. So I think this freedom is important today, that a woman, because she married, most women will naturally go into, they adopt or accept the value system of the family. Most women do that. In India, at least, they very naturally do it. But at the same time, there may be certain value systems which are not healthy. For example, drinking and smoking or partying may be a way of life in a certain family. Now, should a woman, because she is married to a particular family, to uphold the traditions, or should she say no? So these are modern challenges. Modern challenges don't apply. Nobody uses parda now. All that is gone. But even for that matter, parda. So should we take to a regressive Taliban style of functioning where, women cannot study beyond a point? This was there, by the way. It's good that we have progressed. Most of the world has progressed.
Yes,
except
yes.
Except the
few sections.
In certain hardcore Islamic things. But even there, people have moved on. So definitely traditional values, we have to understand the context. There was a time when it was very dangerous. Society was largely made of animals, and the Rakshasa was still dominating, and the woman had to be protected. So many things came up out of that. Like multiple marriages, one man with many wives, but wives hardly had many men. And it was purely the necessity, the strong man who conquered or annexed, he married because he could take care. Now we can't go back to that way, that okay, you can marry any number you want. So we have to understand the spirit behind it. Now we live in a new age, and we have to give a woman equal right to progress in any direction she wants to. At the same time, the rule of law should apply equally to a man or a woman. So for example, sometimes women do tend to misuse the law. Dowry law, for example, it had a meaning, but now it is heavily loaded. So there are people who want money, so they misuse the law. So one has to be very clear, there is not about being man or a woman. You are a soul which is growing. So that's how I believe it should be, and I think world is moving in that direction.
More and more. Okay. Right, sir. My next question connected to this, what are the things mother take from the outer side, means out of India, particularly related to the ashram? What are the things mother inducted in the ashram?
So,
especially related to the women.
So, people feel it is like that in one way. For example, the greater liberty, the equal opportunity that she gave. So, if you go back to the 40s, there is a world of difference between how things were here and in France already, because liberty, equality, fraternity were all, the cry. Now we have accepted even in the Indian constitution. Of course, some people say this is part of woke culture. I don't agree to that, because woke is something different. But this is a good thing, liberty in the true sense, not in the sense it is understood. Equality, fraternity. So she brought that definitely. Now some would say that she got it from the West because it was not there in India at that point of time. But if you go back to the deep ancient Indian system where Gargi could question Yagnavalk.
Yes, matrilineal pattern of society.
So if you go into the deeper Vedic age, it was very much there. There are so many Rishikas in the Vedas. So in one sense, one can equally say she brought back the great ancient values back into focus, where women were trained as in archery, they were trained in everything. But if you go into 40s and times then, many women, I know my own mother, so though she was extremely brilliant, came from a very good family, but education beyond 7th, 8th was impossible. Or if you had to send, it was only to an all-girls school. So now that's not there. She started a school in 40s where girls and boys were together, not only in classroom, but physical education. Which is where, of course, that doesn't mean, but there are also some, for example, boxing, fencing, they learnt with boys side by side, like your boxing opponent of a girl could be a boy. Now, if you see it is even from the Western point of view, futuristic. Now, why did she do that? Because this is real life. If a girl goes, learns martial arts, she is caught unaware. She is not going to be caught by some nice girls who will say, come, let's practice. It may be a very rough crude ruffian.
Right.
So long back, she did things with her great foresight. So women have learned martial arts here. They could learn fencing, they learn boxing, they learn wrestling.
Okay.
And even in wrestling, a woman opponent with a male, man, a boy, let's say a girl and a boy,
mm-hmm.
not grown up, it's not needed, but when boys and girls are studying, they study together not only in classroom but also in playground.
Right.
And in such, like wrestling, now it's where you do get intimate.
Mm-hmm.
But the double advantage, one, a woman grows confident, which she should be. Second, many of these attractions, they just go away. Simply because, you know, you're growing up together. This is something which we see here. And this is how she, you can say, she inducted, some people would feel, Western values, though I don't really think so. I think, I don't know, 40s if I look back. So there was still the Victorian morality and the, you know, that kind of clothes.
Mm-hmm.
She was never for frivolous dressing and all that, for makeup to show yourself. But at the same time, a smart dress like a pant and a shirt, she was, because that was a dress needed for your working.
Yes.
The rest of the time, you can, most of the women wear into salwar suit. That's what given from prosperity or sari. But she was not like, you can't wear a skirt and this thing. So that way she did bring certain new things.
Okay.
We can also say she ushered in a change.
Mm-hmm.
Because today all these things are norms.
So that time, any other particular dress, means dress for the ashram girls?
No, except that girls wore, women rather, mm-hmm. ashram. Now we come to ashram, not
mm-hmm.
the children.
Mm-hmm.
So ashram women, most of them at that time wore saris. Later on, they wore salwar suit, which is the
saris in a particular means particular kind of saris, or
they were distributed because many of them who came and joined,
mm-hmm.
they depended only on the prosperity every month was given to them. They could put a chit, let's say, I need a sari.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be given a sari.
Okay.
Yeah, so the four times a year they could ride.
Mm-hmm.
So most women, because they were used to the fact that many of them in that age
mm-hmm.
were wearing saris.
Mm-hmm.
So it became very natural. But they were not barred or compelled or forced.
Okay.
So later,
No compulsion was there.
Mm-hmm. Later on, they got salwar suit.
Right.
Because that became a more prevalent norm.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, there was a kind of, not compulsion, but if you want to put it like a rule, something like sexuality. So this ashram, one of the things was four things which were particularly like politics,
mm-hmm.
Alcohol, drugs and sexual intercourse. So let's say a woman may be wearing a sari
mm-hmm.
or salwar suit, but she may be disturbing the whole atmosphere by her ways,
mm-hmm.
equally a man.
Mm-hmm.
So then they had to be told that, look here, this is not the place for you.
Right.
This was very rare because they were extreme compassion, and when they opened, they wanted to change. Very rare instance. Mostly
right.
it is just one or two men. They mm-hmm. too, they left because they couldn't bear the intense pressure. The
mm-hmm.
famous cases are one of Harindranath Chattopadhyay. You may have heard his name. He was in the film, Rishikesh Mukherjee's film Bavarchi, also he has acted,
mm-hmm.
made a name, and his poetry was amazing. Shubhendu said that. But he had this lower vital impulse which he couldn't control.
Right.
And at some point he himself went away because he understood that, you know, this is not the place where I should be going.
Right.
Sarat Chand, he wanted to come at one point, but because of his drinking habits, and Shubhendu has appreciated that
mm-hmm.
very much in terms of their literature. So in that sense, it was not about dress.
Mm.
See, what happens is now we judge people based on dress. Now there is a truth of dress that, well, if you, there is something called as a decent dress, let's put it like that,
mm.
which is inner sensibility. Obviously, if you are trying to expose and all that, it shows that you are drawing too much attention. These things are not talked about and they never put any compulsion, but it's understood that, well, if you want to lead the life of a developed human being, everything should reflect, which includes your speech, which includes your dress, which includes everything. But if you want to lead the life of an animal, the mother and Shivinda would say, okay, that's your life.
Mm-hmm.
There was freedom. But then this is not the place for you.
Right.
So in
right.
that sense, that, well, you have to make a choice. She didn't say, no, people should wear this way. You see, men get enticed. No, that they didn't say.
Mm-hmm.
If you are getting enticed, it's your problem. You also be outside and deal with your enticement.
Right, right.
A woman is wearing, now you can educate, make people conscious. So that way they believed in making women and men conscious of what is their goal of life and how their actions, their thoughts, their feelings, they are going to have an impact.
Right.
Rather than making outer rules. So outer rules are very, very few in the ashram.
Okay.
Like you must have seen in the ashram itself, there is nothing like a separate queue for men and women.
Yes, yes.
There is nothing like a separate meditation for men and women. They mix together at every layer. So now if, and Madan Shugindu believed in, see, they have had confidence in their own power.
Mm-hmm.
Give an example of somebody who asked Raman Maharshi Ashram, there was a yogi to whom someone asked, that why everywhere we see this queue.
Mm.
But in Shurvindu Ashram they are allowing freely.
Mm.
Everywhere boys and girls can move together, nobody will point a finger.
Mm-hmm.
So then that yogi gave a very interesting reply.
Mm.
He said, because they are divine beings and they have the power. Because otherwise putting ghee and fire, it's like that.
Right.
After all, people come here and they meet together, but it's called confidence in their own grace.
Right.
So here that's another very novel thing which many times passes
by. Segregation.
No segregation. Goes unnoticed even in dining room. Anywhere there is no segregation.
Right.
So you have to develop. If you are not able to handle it, you are not ready for spiritual life. As simple as that.
Right.
If you are still enticed by, attracted by the worldly life to this extent, a little bit, yes, obviously it will be there. It will be worked out. You have to offer. Mother takes care. That's a process. But supposing you don't want to go in the process, you say, I want to enjoy life the way it is outside. Then they would not say yes or no. They would simply say, that's your choice, but this is not the place.
Right.
But hardly any case where people have been sent away. So that is the speaks of. And despite now how many, it will be 100 years for the ashram.
Hmm.
Nothing which has, you know, there have been one or two instances where people tried to create a scandal. That was later on for political reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, if you see 100 years, it's not a joke.
And
without any external rules.
Right, right.
Where there is no segregation at all. And yet people have automatically maintained something which is somehow their beautiful harmony develops. It's not that people don't get friendly or they don't go through certain experiences.
Right.
Sometimes they do. But they grow very authentically. So this freedom here, Sri Aurobindo said, because all authentic growth is when there is freedom. Otherwise you segregate. But then what happens? Inwardly, you are having the same thing, same attraction, same things, but you don't express it outside because you have learned to put a facade. So they didn't want that. So now the dividends are there because it has grown in freedom. So change is authentic.
Right.
So that's the way ashram has been organized.
Sir, my next question is, suppose one woman wants to come to join the ashram and she doesn't know any handy work for survival purpose or something. So is there any program run by ashram to make her learn for some skill or something?
Okay, so now joining the ashram is a different thing. Joining the ashram is based not on what are your outer capacities.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally becomes irrelevant. It's your aspiration.
Right.
So if there is an aspiration to undertake the yogic journey, so first thing is one must read, know, understand what it means.
Mm.
And then supposing a girl comes or a woman comes who has neither studied or not knows anything, then and the ashram accepts that okay, you become part of the ashram.
Mm.
Then there is no need to worry about survival because all that is taken care of.
Okay.
So you are given a place to stay. A decent place to stay.
Hmm.
Though again, as I said, no segregation. You will not see a only women's hostel.
Hmm.
There is one, but that's became by default only women. It's not labeled as only women.
Right.
Otherwise, everywhere you have rooms of boys and girls. See how organically it grows with freedom.
Hmm.
So, then once she is accepted, she gets a room with a little attached washroom and some small little kitchenette. Nowadays we have that. At some point there used to be a common space, common toilet. And again, no segregation, but yes, it's understood. You have to understand inward, like we have this now. So this was for a stay. As I said, every month prosperity, they could drop the chit, whatever they need, which included basic necessities like dress four times a year, then soap, hair oil for women, sanitary pads and things like that which they may need, that is put in the prosperity chit around mid of month, and the 1st January or 1st of every month they get.
Okay.
So there, this need is taken care of. Dining room is there. Okay. So food is free.
Example,
playground, every activity is open to everyone. Anything they can join.
Okay.
They can join the playground once they are accepted as an ashram inmate. Okay. There will be a period of 3-4 years when they will see whether you are one of those escapists or with, you know, tendencies, especially in men, like for example drugs, or you've just run away, or you're a criminal seeking refuge. So 4 years you have to be by yourself.
Right.
That, but again, if they see that, well, no, there is a genuine intent, so there is a tendency to help you out. Okay, take some place to stay, some food in the dining room is maybe permitted. That becomes, you know, but after 4 years, let's say on an average, once you are accepted as an ashram inmate, then you are taken care of these things. Then medical is free, sports, any activity you can participate based on your age and capacity. Whatever you need, I mean, basic needs are taken care of. So she doesn't need to learn. And then there are classes of, you can learn French, you can learn painting, you can learn any. You can learn computers. There are different classes which take place.
Okay.
So it's up to you. But that's not needed for, like, your survival needs. Much more than that is possible. But learn for the joy of learning.
Okay.
Now, again, there is no hard bound. Like, let's say a woman learns painting or learns French, and after, say, several years, 7 years, 8 years, 10 years, she says, no, I want to get married and go away. There is no compulsion, no restriction. She can just goes out of the ashram, she gets married, and then she may use this skill for whatever she wants to.
Right.
So the ashram doesn't say, oh, we trained you. There is nothing like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
sir, any outreach program for the community outside this Pondicherry you are taking, sir?
There are plenty. See, there is the ashram. That is the core. It's for basically those who are completely dedicated to the yoga.
Right.
So here we don't have any direct outreach program because it's a very concentrated place. Like, let's say in a nuclear facility, if you are working in the core where, you know, the radiation hazards are there, that man is to be focused on that, because if he doesn't do that properly, and if he is busy talking, calling, and, you know, chatting with people, that look here, accidents may happen. So here the basic thing is be focused on your own sadhana.
Okay.
But then there is a need for not outreach. There is nothing like converting and bringing more members, nothing like that, or propaganda. But there is a natural need in the world for things like this. So because of this need, the mother did provide certain spaces, like Sri Aurobindo Society primarily was formed. One of the reasons was as an outreach program, if you want to put it in modern way, to carry the knowledge of the mother and Aurobindo outside. And for people, if they want to then
join,
contribute, or in some way help the work.
So asking some help for
Either way. So Sri Aurobindo Society was primarily created with that purpose by the mother.
Okay.
1960. From Sri Aurobindo Society sprung Auroville. So Auroville 68, but it has its own journey. It went berserk basically, but then it is reorienting itself. It said, we are autonomous, independent, we'll go our own way. That's okay.
Auroville is a branch of this ashram?
No, none of this is a branch. Society is not a branch.
Okay.
It's an organization which was created. So initially there were people who were in the ashram as well as in the society as well as in Auroville. So if you want to use Navy term, they were seconded. They belonged to the ashram, but they were seconded. So they basically remained an ashram inmate, but they were helping work in the society, helping work in the Auroville.
Okay.
But over a period of time, now you have both kinds, those who are in the ashram as well as society, who are also engaging in society work. Like I'm myself, I'm an ashram inmate, but I also go out, give talks, etc. as part of that, edit All India magazine. I'm also formally sort of Aurobindan, and I also go for the talks there. Now, so there would be people like that always, because so that the root, the connectedness with the parent root remains.
Right.
And there always have been. But there are also then who can independently come. They need not come to the ashram, they may join society. Or they may be interested in only society work. They are all over the world. Like there would be 400 centers of society all over the world. So they are engaged in like the outreach program in various ways. But they, of course, they visit the ashram, they can join the ashram collective meditation. They come for a few days and go back. But they are primarily with the society. They are not asked upon to lead a typical ashram life. But it's their sincerity. Among them, there would be true seekers. So they have to lead that life of sadhana. So you see, it's a very fluid thing. You have to ultimately feel inside what is your primary motive. Same with Auroville, there are people who come visit.
So Auroville, basic purpose is Auroville means...
So you can say that society was outreach program of from the ashram. Now Auroville was, you know, because the growing need all over the world among people who may not want to take up sadhana. They don't, because they find yoga a little, the amount of dedication required. But still they are a human beings with goodwill.
Right.
They do believe in humanity must progress. That's
right.
Their urge.
Right.
So for them she created Auroville.
Okay.
So which was like a lot of people from the world who were not really ready for yoga. At the same time they were ready to take a step further towards something more than being human. Now many of them caught fire of the yoga. There are people who are engaged in sadhana. But there are people, they are not like, they need not. It's a place of experimenting with human evolution. So you can put it like that. So she created a space in Auroville for that. So it's very wide that way. You know, all kinds of streams, all kinds of people coming in, joining. It's a poor, relatively porous group. Here people are more concentrated or expected to be more concentrated on the goal of integral yoga. There you may not be focused on integral yoga. It is enough if you do some kind of karma yoga and serve the divine and want to uplift yourself to something more than human, at least live by some higher human aspirations. So Auroville is for that. It's a vast. You didn't want to mix the two.
To be a separate entity.
Yes.
Joined
only inwardly, deep inside. Joined through the mother.
But a separate entity.
Joined through the mother. But... Okay. Auroville is independent in organization. Society is independent in organization.
Right.
And the ashram is completely independent. They draw the inspiration. Similarly, now there are many centers all over the world, like Odisha, West Bengal, many places all over the world, which are neither connected to society nor to Auroville. There are a group of people who started a study circle.
Okay.
Like, only I got a message from someone who is in Africa, who they are a group reading Savitri. So now they suddenly have asked that, you know, can there be somebody who can give us a little more formal talk? So why? Because nobody says that why, there is no permission required. So there are study groups, there are centers like that where they are dedicated to Shurinder and the mother and their work. And they are not formally connected to society or to Auroville. They may have visited the ashram, taken inspiration, but like this group has most likely not even visited the ashram. They are just reading Savitri study.
Right.
So it's very, very wide and flexible.
Sir, if I and my family want to join or learn this yoga, it's not particularly any family, is there any provision to come here and learn for a particular, because I cannot for more than 1 week.
So, best is to read Mother and Sri Aurobindo's writings.
Right.
Now, plenty of talks and other things are also available, my own channel. Not my channel that way, Auroma, which plenty of my talks get uploaded there. Then there is another Ask Alokda, where...
second one, sir?
Ask Alokda, A-S-K-A-L-O-K-D-A. Achha. So, that's a website where people just put in their questions. They can even email. askalokda@gmail.com.
Right.
So these are effort. Many others are putting effort, like Sakar. So there are people who have given talks. They are uploaded in their own channels. So where people can have a little more structured and specific subject, because Madan Shubhinda are very vast.
Mm-hmm.
People sometimes feel lost, though it's always best to directly read their writings.
Right.
But it's not, everyone is not ready. They want something little more easy to comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
So they can listen to these talks, and then yes, they should, you or anyone, they should visit the ashram maybe just few days, be near the samadhi. If there is any talk going on in society or somewhere, my talks go on regularly, for example.
Okay.
So they can just join anybody. I mean, there's no money or anything involved in that.
Right.
Anybody can join. Right. And then they can read something, meet some of the people if they wish to. But maximum time, they should be in the ashram atmosphere, at the samadhi, eat food in the dining room, then visit the department, then go back. And then continue their journey. Well, the journey is inner.
Mm-hmm.
Being in ashram is a help, but not indispensable.
Right.
Sometimes it can even be a disadvantage, because one may start believing that because I have the stamp of being an ashram inmate, therefore I am already on the way. But you may have noticed that this is a strange ashram, because there is no dress code and you are not called Swami or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because these things may breed a very false idea that you are already someone. If you are a Swami, you have to do it inside. Swami is master of yourself, your own nature. It's not a dress. So this is how they have broken those ideas. You won't get to know who is an ashram inmate and who is not an ashram inmate.
Right.
So, and they have called all kinds of people, because everybody must change. So this ashram is organized in a very unique way in that. So anybody can come in, join the collective meditation, maybe go to the playground, just visit, come for darshan days and visit Shubhinda's room, and then go back. Then do the reading, your own study, listening and growth, which is primarily an inner growth.
Right, sir. Sir, for reading things, shall I start with Sri Aurobindo or shall I start with Mother?
If you ask me, the Mother, I would recommend Letters on Yoga of Sri Aurobindo and Mother's Conversations.
Right, sir.
You ask me, that's what I would recommend.
Right, sir. Next, sir, sir, you work with Mother, sir?
No. I was 13 when Mother physically left her body. And my parents were not devotees. They were devotees in Bhakta in a different way, but traditional yoga.
Right.
So they were Ram Bhaktas and very deeply given to surrender to Lord Rama. But not to, they didn't know. And I was in a village where there was no outreach program, anything. But that doesn't really matter. Or if you see over a period of time, that doesn't really, because sadhana is primarily inner. It has its own beauty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somebody who had a balcony darshan of the Mother is, you know, is incomparable. Let's put it like that.
That is correct.
But now we have the samadhi where we feel the same presence.
Sir, that's all. All the things, sir.
So you can ask me anytime. Just
right, sir. And you are so generous, sir. You have given.
It's a joy to share whatever one can
sir,
share.
Sir,